Hey listeners, Lex on the Decks here. Before you get stuck into this episode of Hot Girls, I wanted to let you know about something else you may be interested in. Though Hot Girls in its podcast format isn't releasing new episodes any longer, if you head over to my Substack, which is lexonthedecks.substack.com, you'll find more interviews and insight on gender minority artists and how to overcome any barriers to entry. You'll also get the opportunity to sign up to my weekly newsletter, 5 Good Things. This is an email letter which will land in your inbox on Fridays, sharing 5 of my favourite cultural or creative discoveries of the week. You'll find all that on lexonthedecks.substack.com. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy this episode of Hot Girls.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to Hot Girls with me, Lex on the Decks. This week, I am super happy to be joined by someone I consider a key mentor and someone who has such a deep love of music and growing and building an industry of longevity and creativity. Terry, also known as one half of Atomic Hooligan, is the founder of On The Rise DJ Academy and a DJ and producer and label founder. Through this conversation, I get to turn the tables and ask him all the questions about his journey in music, the wonderful, exhausting, emotional ride that it is pursuing your passion, and what it takes to make that work and make it real. So without further ado, Terry Hooligan on the Hot Girls podcast. Let's go.
Ladies, gentlemen,
listen up. You're listening to Hot Girls with Lex on the Decks.
We in the mix.
It's fire.
Keep it going. We on fire.
From London for the world.
Let's go in.
I do think that, like, for example, if I say to my friends I'm absolutely exhausted, they're like, oh, you just let something slip. Like, don't worry about it. You just need to let something slip. For me, that feels like saying the things that you really love and really care about, like, it's okay to just let them drift.
No, it's not.
For a moment.
It's not. And one of the things that you've kind of got to juggle in the early periods of really like self-actualizing your own career and your own path is figure out what is important to you. And when you're in that moment of flux, I'm still in that moment of flux. There's still different things that I think are important on a weekly basis. But you do have to like kind of follow every little path, even if it's like kind of really finitely, to try and find out what's the best path to go down, because ultimately there's no one there to save you. When you're out there by yourself, you could have a great peer group, you could have a really good friend group, great family and stuff like that. But ultimately, no one's there to save you. So you have to make a lot of decisions, one based on like kind of your moral and your like kind of enjoyment compass over there, but secondary, your like financial compass. Because that's just what you have to do when you're, yes, there is something to be said when you're self-employed. There's definitely something to be said for value your own time, never do anything for free. And like kind of don't say yes to everything. That's a big thing. But ultimately in the early stages, you kind of do want to say yes to everything, because there might be things that you're saying yes to that may not fully be in your wheelhouse, but ultimately could end up in your wheelhouse. Like I started the DJ school because I wanted an extra income. It wasn't something that I thought I'd be doing for the rest of my life. From being a professional DJ, label owner, having like a successful PR company and all that kind of stuff, I thought that was going to be the rest of my life. And then the extra income would be like the little DJ school on the side, which I'll like kind of train a few people up to teach for me. And I'll like kind of be big boss man and walk in every now and again and say, yeah, you're doing great. Yeah. And being an inspiration, being typical.
Just scratch a little bit. And then
yeah, scratch a little bit and go, well, I'll see you next month. But ultimately, that's what ended up being the love of my life. Like, I absolutely adore it because I went down that road because I worked hard to make it happen. If I'd let that slip in the early stages, I wouldn't have made the contacts and stuff like that. So you never know what's going to happen. So you're supposed to be knackered all the time. Yeah. You're absolutely supposed to. Don't let anybody tell you that you shouldn't be.
That you shouldn't be. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And like, I don't mind. I always think as well, I know I go to bed happy and I sleep better knowing that I've put absolutely everything that I could into something that I care about.
100%.
The thing that I can't handle, I can handle being tired much better than I can handle feeling like I've not really like gone after things that I want.
100%. It's healthy to be tired. It really is. Like, it's healthy to put your stamp on the day. And that's quite an old school thing to say. But if you really feel like you've put the stamp on your stamp on this day, then go to bed. And how you put a stamp on the day is by being fucking knackered.
Yeah, you do. I always like there's this comparison of like a lifetime and dead time that I kind of like as a phrase. And like a lifetime is basically where you're doing things that make you feel alive. And dead time is where you're kind of just like passing time. You're not really sure where that time went. And I feel like dead time isn't tiring at all. Like, you just kind of move through it. But like a lifetime is tiring because you're putting yourself in every single moment that you're in and everything you're doing.
But 100%. And you're not supposed to enjoy absolutely everything that you do in a day to make your dream come true. Like, you're really not. Like, 90% of a lot of my days is accounting, chasing leads, doing all this boring shit that I never thought that I'd ever do. When I was staying in a 5-star zoo hotel in Kazakhstan, I thought my life was going to be that for the rest of my life. But
yeah, I'm good with this. This is cool.
This is perfect. Yeah. You go, oh, there's the Hummer to take me to the club. Amazing. Like, I never thought that I would be an actual adult that had to do things to maintain a business, but that's what you have to do. So that a lifetime, as you say, that involves some dead time as well, to be honest. That involves some, I really don't want to do this, but I have to do it to maintain my dream, my focus, my goal.
This is maybe a kind of big question, Terry, but what do you think is your biggest motivator? Where do you think you get your ambition and energy from?
Poverty, really. I say that half joking and half not, to be honest. I've seen like kind of down times and I've seen how hard they are. And I think my biggest motivator is how lucky I am to be able to keep myself out of poverty with something that I love so much. I think my other biggest motivator, I've got two, and it sounds really cheesy, but like inspiring people, number one, I absolutely love it. And it's not a completely kind of selfless act either. I absolutely love it. It's like a drug to me, like to be able to like kind of inspire people and for people to turn around and say, Terry was a big part of this or whatever. And creation, like creating all the time. Like, if that's my compass for creating has gone from actually making music to creating new things to inspire other people to do that. So I'd say they're my three motivators.
Do you think that's changed? You said obviously the DJ school was something that you wouldn't necessarily, you thought it could be a money earner, and then it became so much more than that. So do you think that part of being a motivator to other people and seeing their creative work is something that's developed as you've gone through your career?
100%. And that's, I started a label pretty early, and I wanted to put other people on, as it were, because I've always thought that my journey included like kind of putting on, because I've never been the best music producer in the world. I've never wanted to be. I've always been a very good DJ, but I knew that my path lay somewhere other than sitting in a studio for 18 hours a day. I'm just not interested in that at all. So I always knew that putting other people on would be like where I sit in the industry, but I always thought that would be through record labels or publishing companies, which I've done. I've got, they're all running. When I actually stand there in the studio and I have a student like yourself, that have a student that's come out and I see your path afterwards, that is what, and that's happened many times before you came to us, and it's happened many times after. And that is what's like kind of given me the inspiration and the love to keep going, even in the harder times with the academy. Like, that's definitely what's like kind of pushed me forward.
Yeah. With the labels, I want to hear about this because obviously we've had many conversations over the years, but I've never really spoken about the labels that you've started and run and your experiences with those. And I'd always think there's many, if you're working in music, whether it's DJing, producing, there's so many different things that you can kind of turn your attention to 100%. Be entrepreneurial in the space. What's the process of founding a label?
Very different to now to what it was before. Like, my first label I started, called Menu Music, in 2004 2004, always approached it with the only way to start a label is with a good A&R ethic. And everything else is like kind of secondary. Everything else can just be sorted out by someone else, basically.
And so, by everything else, presumably you mean like the sort of the distribution, the marketing, kind of little parts of it. Yeah.
All of that can go in other places like accounting, like distribution, mastering, all of that kind of stuff can be sorted out. It's a secondary thought. And I've always approached everything like music first. I was really inspired to start the label through people that I met on tour, like a guy called Rico Tubbs, who absolutely amazing DJ, amazing producer, still doing his thing now. I run my second label with him, DJ called Lady Wax. Like those two, when I heard them and what they had to offer, I was like, yep, we're starting a label, we're putting a label together, and these are going to be our main artists and so on. And that was in the vinyl days. That was in the days where you would go and you get a couple of tunes, you send them off for vinyl mastering, you get the artwork done and blah, blah, blah. You'd like kind of hand register them with PRS and all that kind of stuff. It was an MCPS back in those days, which is basically like the royalties that cover the reproduction on like physical products and stuff like that. So all of that, I'm saying all that, I have no interest in any of that. I used to have someone do that for us. But the vinyl mastering and all that kind of stuff, we used to get that done. 3 months later, the record would hit the stores. You talk to the distributor, it would go out. You get the figures back, so on and so forth. So that was, it was almost a simpler way of doing things, because what you had was a captured audience in a record shop. They used to walk into that record shop once a week to get those records. I'd already become like a relatively big DJ at that point. So it's like, Tommy Cooligan's label's record, we're going to check that out. It's almost a simpler way, a lot more expensive, but almost a simpler way to do it. And then in 2008, I started another label that was a little bit more like kind of bass music. My first label was very much a breakbeat label, because I come from like a breakbeat background, really. The second one was more of like a bass music. We released like kind of hip hop and a version of hip hop, drum and bass, like kind of garage, a lot of garage at the moment. We started out in 2008 as just a digital label, when all labels were just starting to go digital. And that was, again, very music focused, very what do I want to DJ with? And went out and A&R tracks and found tracks that I wanted to DJ with. I started that with a guy called Rico Tubbs, who we signed to, he was called DJ Infecto first, and we rechristened him Rico Tubbs, because his actual name is Riku. He's from, he's Finnish. He's like the number one guy in Finland, basically, which isn't saying much, really. I'm joking.
The one.
It's amazing scene over there.
He's the biggest export from Finland.
Apart from the Bomb Funk MCs. But he was actually like, he did all like their second album stuff. Like, it doesn't really matter. But like, that actually turned out to be a little bit harder. I mean, in those days, we still had like kind of paper press and stuff. And again, Atomic Hooligan and Rico Tubbs starting a label. So we got a bit of like kind of shine off the back of it. And people were interested in what we were doing. We got in like DJ Mag and so on and so forth. And we managed to make it big. We talked to retailers, got a good name with Beatport and and Juno and stuff like that. And because they were really the only portals that were available then. Mm. Now, I wouldn't even know where to starting a label now, to be honest. Like, I would. It's easy. You go to digital distributor, you got a name, you got the artwork, you got five releases, bang, it's out there. And you can literally be on every single digital portal in the entire world. But that doesn't mean that anybody's going to take any notice of you at all. So it still kind of does come back down to like the traditional roots of PR. I mean, I started a PR company in On the Rise Promotions and a publishing company in like 2011, I think, because...
And was that the first time that On the Rise was used?
Well, kind of. So On the Rise was actually established as a PPL collections agency, which PPL is the rights that are inside music that's released for the performers rather than the writers. So say if, I don't know, whoever writes the song and then Beyonce performs it, Beyonce would get a cut of what's called the PPL. So it's a thing that not many kind of artists really... I mean, if you write it and perform it, then you get both ends. So... it's a thing that a lot of artists don't really know about. So that was started, and it was going all right. And it kind of just couldn't, I wasn't involved there at the time. I was still DJing and stuff. And then Jay, Jay Cunning, who is now like the or the global marketing manager for Denon DJ. He left on the rise to go there. Okay. But he's the, like I say, again, he's still like my best mate and stuff like that. Like,
still hooks you up with some equipment now, I guess.
Yeah, still get Rain and Denon equipment in the studio and stuff, which is awesome. And we started as a PR company because I had like a little PR company that I just used to run from my kitchen, again, not this kitchen, a different kitchen, where I would send other label stuff to, because I'd created relationships with like UKF and DJ Mag and Mix Mag and all this kind of stuff through DJ number one, but through my own label number two. So I used to sell like small labels out with like exclusives on Juno and reviews in DJ Mag and stuff like that. So we just decided to take it and like kind of make it into a music services company. And I realized that I hated it. Like, I really didn't want to be in that part of the music industry anymore. During that time as well, I went back to college to train as a social worker.
Really?
Yeah. So I really wasn't in the mindset of being in like the kind of the music industry very much at the time either. Mm-hmm. Like it was, what a lot of DJs and a lot of people in the music industry will not verbalize is, there's a finite amount of time to your career, really. It's not quite as bad as being a footballer. There's a lot of like kind of 45, 50, 55, 60-year-old DJs. But if the music that you're doing or the music that you're making or the music that you're playing isn't like the kind of hot thing at that particular time, you kind of take a back step and you end up doing gigs and doing things that are a pale comparison of what you did 10 years before. And I kind of spotted that quite early. Yeah. And I was like, I've had this amazing career over here for 10 years, playing all over the world, playing the biggest festivals in the world, playing to like 20, 30, 40,000 people in arenas and shit like that. Like it. And what, now I'm going to go and be a support act for 50 people at a bar. Like, I don't, and I'm not taking that away from anybody. Like, that's not, I'm not belittling anybody for doing that or anything like that. But particularly with music that didn't sound fresh to me anymore, I'd done all these amazing things and I didn't want to go down that same route again to a lesser extent and to a lesser extent and to a lesser extent and to a lesser extent. So I decided to break out and make the PR company, make the music services company. And then in that kind of time as well, that's when I started doing the DJ school, because I taught DJing for a little while to like friends, and I'd worked for a company called, funnily enough, just the DJ Academy, who are like an online academy. I was like their London tutor for a little while. I was really enjoying it while I was doing it, but I never thought it was going to be a career. But at the same time, I was building relationships with Pioneer, with Denon, with retailers and stuff, like, because my career has always been about building relationships with people. And that then blossomed into On The Rise DJ Academy as it is today, the best DJ academy in the world. No, I'm joking.
It is. I think it is.
But like, we've got a very unique like kind of USP where I actually care about doing one-on-one lessons. I'm not looking to like kind of scale what I do up to like kind of and sell it on YouTube or anything like that, because that's got its place. It's great. But I really like the personal interaction and the one-on-one kind of stuff that I do with people. And that's what it turned into.
Mm. One thing I think, so when I met you and when I came to On The Rise, I started DJing with lessons when I was in Australia. Then I'd done some more lessons at somewhere else in London. And I think what I felt like is I'd been taught the skills of DJing at other places. What I hadn't really learned or what I hadn't really understood until I kind of was able to talk to you and have some of the conversations that we had or with Keisha was just
with Keisha,
like,
as well, yeah.
Yeah, it was the industry and knowing yourself within it. And it was more about the confidence piece or more about how to actually like approach myself as a DJ and have a career from it, that as much as the kind of technical side of things and as much as having the space to have open conversations about the things I didn't feel so confident in technically, it was also about that broader piece of like how to forge a career and how to grow a brand for yourself and how to understand those things that will actually ultimately get you gigs and will ultimately allow you to have a career in the industry. One of the things that I wanted to ask you is, I think as a teacher, you see all of these different people come into your studio, and obviously so many people then go on to have careers and others don't, and part of that probably comes from passion, but there must be other qualities where you're like, that's a quality, or that's something that enables someone to go on and have more of a career of things. What are some of the things that you think you observed that have made the difference in people's journeys?
When I say passion, I mean a real passion for, like, regardless of absolutely everything else, like not even having a career path. Some of the most successful students that I've had are people that haven't really envisioned a career path in front of them. They just want to play music. But there's a lot to be said for trying to create your brand in the early days and stuff like that. But yes, I'm here to help you with that. But I'm also here to help you, like, curate your passion. That's, I think, the number one thing for me. Yes, there's a lot, like I say, there's a lot to be said for brand creation and curating your image and stuff like that. And I think that's super important, like getting that right as early as possible, but leaving yourself open to, like, to change that and morph inside it and stuff like that. Like, yeah. like you've been doing, exactly, yeah. Like you've been doing. Like, you're leaving yourself enough, like, kind of wiggle room to morph into the best Lexi somewhere in the future, like, which is awesome. But I think one of the things that I really gravitate to is people that are just passionate about music, and that will always be the most important thing. I would never even consider that any of my students haven't made it, because everybody's got their own aspirations. I mean, the amount of people that kind of come to me and goes, I don't want to be a professional or anything. And I'm like, well, I don't teach anybody any different. Like, it's not like you're a professional, you're not a professional, I'm going to give you some kind of secret that I'm not going to give that person or anything like that. Everybody gets taught the same, and it's all the fundamentals of expressing yourself in it and being as true to your passion as possible. And I know that seems like really, like, ambiguous, but it's the truth. It's 100% the truth. Yes, we can work on brand stuff. Yes, we can, like, for the longer courses, if you come to me like you did and said, I'm really looking for a mentor, I'm not necessarily looking for a DJ teacher, I'm looking for someone like a DJ mentor. And we went through loads of different stuff. We tightened up your DJ style, number one, but we worked on lots of stuff afterwards. We had a lot of conversations. And hopefully you came out of it like kind of with what you needed. But there's that, which is wicked. But there's also just loads of DJs that I've had through my doors who are just really passionate. I don't want to bait anybody up with their names, but DJs that are big in their respective scenes at the moment. And the first time that they came, they're just like, I love music. I love vinyl. I love going record digging. I love this, and I love scratching, or I love whatever. And yes, we can work on that. And that is your truest route to wherever you want to go, is like maintaining that burning passion that you first started with. It's what I kind of think that I was a somewhat perceivably successful DJ for quite a long time. It's because I had a passion for music, and that was the number one thing. All I wanted to do was go out there and play tunes that I wanted to listen to myself. And that's it.
But I think what you're really good at is liberating people to put their creativity out there and to be passionate and to actually express it. And I think sometimes that's hard. I think sometimes when you really love something, you can shy away from it because it can kind of scare you. That sounds like sort of romanticizing a passion, but that's how it's definitely felt for me at times. You know,
100%. Like, and do you know why? Not to cut in, but you know why it scares a lot of people? Because they've been in love with something, whether that's DJing, whether that's production, whether that's whatever, and they're scared of it because they want it to be perfect. They want their product to be perfect. And the first thing that I tell people is perfection is nothing. There is no perfection when it comes to any of it. Like, perfection is a complete fallacy that will have you frozen in your boots and not able to go out there and show the world what you're capable of. Because there's always someone better. There's always something funkier. There's always someone whatever. Like, but they're not bringing this. I sound like a fucking motivational speaker.
But it's good. I love it.
They're not bringing what you're bringing to the table, and what you're bringing to the table is you, and you're uniquely you. And that is why I'm so hard and as strong on people developing their own passion, having a passion to start with and then developing it, because there's no one that can compete with you because they're not you. Like, there's someone that could be better at programming. There's someone that could be better at scratching. There's someone that could be tighter at mixing. There can be someone that's got more music than you, any of these kind of things. And there's always going to be. I'm a scratch DJ. I know I'm not the best scratch DJ in the world, but I know that when I play a set, what I bring to it is me. And that's what everybody should have. They should have their own X factor that they bring to the table, and people either gravitate to it or they won't. The people that gravitate to it are your fan base. They're the ones that love what you do, whether that's 10 people or that's 10 million people. There's nothing there that will give you any kind of longevity as in a career that you have to force. Like the forcing part of it will dictate that at some point people are going, feels a bit forced, doesn't it? Like, I'm not really into that person anymore because what they're doing doesn't feel genuine. If you just come with pure, like, you just come with you from day one, and that does that in no way, shape or form does that include any kind of perfection. Perfection is the, when I hear people say, yeah, but I'm a bit of a perfectionist, it's like, well, sorry, can't help you. Unless you stop being a perfectionist, then we can't really do much. And that, I've always said that perfection is the final destination. And if you're at the final destination, then you're not traveling. And the best you can get out of a career is you'll just keep traveling.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Let's talk about Kanye. Like, I fucking love Kanye. Like, I think if he burps into something and then uses a filter and then repeats it and then puts a beat under it, I'm like, Kanye's amazing. Like, because Kanye can do that. Like, yeah. And his legacy has dictated that he can do that. Someone else might hate that. Like, hate that because they hate him or whatever. Like, there's...
Yeah. Or, like, I heard Chaka Khan the other day talking about Through the Fire, and obviously he used her voice to Through the Wire, and she hated it.
Yeah, yeah.
She hated it. And probably because she comes with this lens of what it was.
Yep.
Whereas a lot of the listeners to that song are coming with the lens of what it is.
You're always looking through your own lens at stuff, 100%. Mm. And whether it's your creation, like, your creation is not yours once it leaves. Once it leaves, it's out there and anybody can view it in any way that they want. It's up to them. And you've got really no say over it. You've got no right of a say over it. Mm. Once you release that out into the public, then that's gone. That's theirs. You can have your feelings about it. Whatever happens, how you feel about what you create and what other people feel about what they create, is there's no link between the two. It almost doesn't matter.
Different area of music industry and your life and how it's changed. How have you found the adjustments in lifestyle that you have to go through as a DJ? So starting with touring, did touring come naturally to you and late nights?
In the early days, in the early days, like, I became professional DJ, like, where I didn't do anything else in 2000s. Like, actually dead on 2000, but from probably 95 upwards, I was playing at weekends, doing radio shows, turning up for work late and tired. And like, I used to work in a shop, which I'm sure most of your listeners won't remember, a place called the Music and Video Club. It was kind of like MVC, it was called. It was like HMV and Blockbusters all, like, kind of smashed into one in one ugly blue shop.
Did you have a nice uniform?
Yeah. So, like, used to wear a blue, like, polo shirt with long sleeves with, like, used to have, like, little spliff burns in it and stuff like that. And it wasn't great. And I ended up being a manager of the one in Hendon. And then, this was probably from 95 to like 99, probably like more like 96 to 99. Like, I worked in all the different shops around Watford and Hendon and all around North London, North West London basically. And then I went to work at the head office as a replay, and then I worked as a buyer for a little while and that was the last proper job I had. I left that in like 99. I used to just dream about not being at work and, like, kind of being on the road and late nights. And at that point I was like 22, 23 or whatever. And I adapted to the lifestyle very, very easily. Cause I used to be at gigs all the time and playing gigs and stuff like that. And I'd get home at 4 o'clock in the morning and I'd have a hangover the next day. And but then, like, kind of 2000 came around and we cut our first record and boom, I was just on the road for the next pretty much 15 years, to be honest. So yeah, that adaptation to lifestyle wasn't really like the biggest thing for me. when I kind of slowed down, that was the big changeover for me. Like the slowdown was the big changeover. And again, this, like I was saying earlier, there's a finite amount of time that you kind of get to spend doing stuff like that. And it's not, sometimes it's not your choice. Somewhat being forced to slow down a little bit because the gig started to slow up. And if I'd had a normal job, it would have been fine and I would have still been whatever, doing whatever. But as I was completely dependent on DJ money, label money, and like kind of selling records and stuff like that. And then like 2008 came around and the money from making music wasn't as good anymore. I wasn't really, like we'd signed two big publishing deals and stuff. So that was keeping us going for a long time. And then I was like kind of playing at Fabric once a month. And going off to Canada and doing a tour, like a 20-day tour there, going to Russia and doing 3 days over there, then going to Australia, New Zealand, like kind of Asia. I was in Japan once a month and stuff. It was just, I was going all over the place. So I was completely in tour mode, like just bouncing from one place to the other. Like I gave up my flat. I just put all my stuff around my mum's because I was never there.
Yeah.
Like I just put all my stuff around my mum's, and on the two or three days where I was back in the country, or if I was playing at Fabric, I'd just go and stay at my old room at my mum's and stuff like that. And it wasn't until like kind of probably 2008 again that I got my own flat again and stuff like that. And it was just quite mad. And then all of a sudden it kind of just started to just taper off, like kind of 2009, 2010, it kind of tapered off. And then by the time 2011 came around, I was like, I'm kind of not doing this anymore. This is a bit mad. Like, then that's when I went back to college and became like kind of trained as a social worker and all that kind of stuff. And that, even now today, I feel the lifestyle changes, like the kind of tapering out of it all and the lifestyle change. And before the pandemic, I was still playing two times a month, going somewhere in the world and doing something. And the pandemic, it was a real kick in the ass, like when it came to a lifestyle change. Because I realized like my entire social life and all that kind of stuff was really like kind of intertwined with my career. I would be more than happy to stay in the house like 3 weekends out of the 4 in the month, because on that other weekend I'd be in Spain in Malaga playing to like 20,000 people, and all of a sudden I'm not doing that and I'm getting fat watching Marvel films. And it's like, what the fuck just happened? What happened to my life?
When it starts, when the pandemic first hit, we just thought it'd be for a few weeks or whatever. So you start off thinking, oh, whatever, I can watch Marvel films for a bit and slightly overeat, and then oh, back out again.
Yeah, and then 3 stone later and I've watched the entire MCU 12 times. I'm like, oh fuck. Bollocks, I'm going to have to go back to the gym. I have to start watching something else. Bloody hell. But yeah, the slowing down definitely was a different lifestyle for me. I think that from a point of view of the people that might be listening to this, if you've got a lifestyle there already, whether that's a healthy lifestyle, whether that's like not drinking, then when you go to gigs, don't drink. Don't interrupt your lifestyle too much to make your dream of playing out happen, because it's not the pressures might be there to. I've been very candid about this in the past. Like I did every drug under the sun. I've drunk everything. Like I've done everything that goes with the DJ lifestyle, because that's what I wanted to do as a kid. It's not like it was a complete changeover for me when I became a DJ, because I was living to a certain extent that lifestyle before that anyway, but a much like kind of reduced version of it, and one that I couldn't really afford. So it's good to get some DJ money to support it. Like as I've got older, that massively tapered off, because I realized that I couldn't do it. And I haven't done anything like that in 10 years, like it probably longer. But it doesn't have to be a shock to your system. Like if you're, and I'm not advocating doing drugs here, what I'm advocating for is if you're a gym bod and you live a healthy lifestyle and stuff like that, when you get on the road, nowadays it's extremely easy to maintain that when you're on the road. Like you don't have to eat Burger King or like kind of to be out of your daily yoga routine and stuff like that. You can definitely do all of that when you're on the road as well. God knows I could have done, I just didn't. Because I was too involved with partying and ending up on a tugboat to Norway or something like that after a heavy night out.
But to your point, when you went into the industry, you didn't have to think about it. Like you can get away with things when you're younger, and when it was just when partying was your kind of breakout. But then as your life, as it starts to pick up that you're in those scenes and in those spaces all the time,
yeah,
then have to start to be a bit more proactive sometimes about like
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's choices that I've made in my career, like health-wise, which I don't regret them, but if I was to go back and do them again, I wouldn't do them again. Like massively heavy drinking at some point. And I've never been dependent on alcohol to like kind of get my groove on or anything like that. Like I've never been dependent. Like alcohol isn't my on switch like it is for some people. But at the same time, when there's free drink in the green room, I'm going to drink that free drink because it's fun times. Mm. And I'm going to get people in and I'm going to have people in the booth with me and sharing shots with them and stuff like that, because that's what I love doing. I mean, it's not necessarily a thing that I do. I'm saying that as complete bollocks, but like, like I do enjoy that aspect. I'm a very social person, like in that scenario, but you don't have to be like that. You don't have to bow to pressures to be like that. If you like a drink before you go and DJ, then have a drink. If you don't want to drink, don't drink. Yeah. If you like to have a nice healthy meal, which I do nowadays, like a nice healthy meal before you go and DJ, then do that. You mm-hmm. don't have to, whatever your lifestyle is before, it can still be a lifestyle with small changes around like kind of you going out and playing and traveling and stuff like that. It doesn't have to change too much.
Yeah. I've been DJing for quite a long time, but when I was 21, 22, when I was fresh out of uni and I first started, I partied so much that I think that actually really held me back. It really slowed me down.
Mm. Yeah, but yeah, yeah.
I now look at that and think, well, maybe it's kind of a good thing, because now, if I'm now at a point where I'm like, okay, I know exactly where I want to go with this, I know what the career path looks like, but I've taken control a bit more of my lifestyle, and I feel like I know where my line is. Like I know how much I can party before I actually can't do anything the next day. And sometimes that's fine. And sometimes you create the space for that. But yeah, in some ways I'm like, maybe it's a good thing that I didn't kind of rock it off at that point. Because maybe I would have crashed. You know, when I was younger, I didn't think anything of like horrendous hangovers and like vomiting all day. I was like, this is just part of it. Let's go.
You're talking to a 44-year-old bloke that hardly drunk over lockdown at all. Because I don't drink at home. I love drinking when I'm
you're not like stuff. A wine on the sofa kind of guy.
Not at all. Not in the slightest. Like I've had 3 beers sitting in my fridge behind me since Christmas 2019. Like it's
really?
I just don't drink at home. Like drinking is a social thing for me. But you're talking to someone who went to Box Park a couple of weeks ago with a mate of mine, and I had 3 beers and I was hungover for 2 days. But that's the thing. Like, I think we need to inject a little bit more like kind of self-actualization into this, like, and say that you can be whoever you want to be. If you're that person at home, or you're that person on your run up to your tipping point of success, you can still be that person afterwards. You can be someone else if you want to be someone else. It's all in your hands. You have complete control of everything that kind of you of yourself, not necessarily your career in certain aspects, but you have complete control of how you behave within your career. And I think that, yes, it's very tempting to get involved with a lot of alcohol, and not to put too fine a point on it, like sleeping around, doing drugs, doing stuff like that. Mm. If that was you before, then that's probably going to be you when you do your thing. Like you might want to rethink that, because that is that you're going to have that was there before, but times 50.
Yeah,
like that's going to be so much more available to you. Everything that you do is going to, that all your vices are going to be 10 times more available to you. If you reach an actual point of a tipping point in your career, and the promoter picks you up from the airport and they go, what do you want? They're not talking about McDonald's. They're talking about stuff that you actually want, whether that's weed, whether that's whatever it is. And if that's what you want to do, bro, do your thing. Like if you want to be a bit more careful about it, then that's a really good idea, because you will maintain like a clearer head, and you'll be able to like kind of not make maybe stupid decisions that you would if you were, because again, the situation that you're put in is times 10 of anything that you experienced when you weren't a DJ. So there'll be things that will have bigger ramifications if you choose to do them. If you chose to do something when you're just like, I don't know, Jenny or John at the bar, but then you choose to do that when you're a headliner act of like a festival, I think traditionally a lot of DJs were loved for their bad behavior, for like kind of cheeky bad boy or bad girl behavior and stuff like that. I don't think that's necessarily the case anymore. So if you make a silly decision that's prompted by substances such as whatever or alcohol or whatever, if you did that just in your hometown, everybody think you're a knob for a couple of weeks or whatever. If you do that when you're a DJ, that's hitting social media, and that's like kind of, so there are ramifications for that. But you don't have to be anything you don't want to be.
Relationships are such a huge part of the industry because it isn't governed in a way that other things are. And I am just like a real advocate of the importance of just being nice to people.
Yeah, 100%. Whoever it is. Don't, like, if you're a shitbag person, then you're going to be a shitbag person, and you have to pull back your shitbagness 100%. Like, I've always been a people person. I pride myself on my relationships. I mean, I'm also a person that if I don't like someone, I can't pretend that I do. Like, I really can't. Like, so I know that limitation about myself. I know that is a real limitation.
I was wondering that because I know that if you think someone's a prick, you'll know it. Like, you'll kind of have made that decision. But I don't think I've ever seen you with anyone necessarily you haven't got on with, because obviously when I've seen you, it's been in conversations with your friends or people that you work with or people that you've invested in.
I wouldn't
know what you'd be like if you saw someone you're like, nah.
Quiet, like totally quiet. Like not engaging at all. I mean, I'm also someone that doesn't really suffer fools kindly. Like, luckily enough, I say that, I don't really know many fools because there's not fools in my circle. But I don't really suffer fools very, very easily. Like, and if you're doing something to annoy me, then I'll fucking tell you about it. Mm-hmm. But like, but not me personally. I don't think I'm the universal barometer for anything for prickness. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're not doing something that's like kind of objectively rubbish, then I'm not going to tell you about it. It's whatever, it's your behavior. But if you're doing something that's like really like kind of objectively bad, then I'll tell you about it. But if I don't like someone, there's not many people I don't like, to be honest. Like, I get along with people that a lot of other people don't get along with. And that's how I've created a lot of very, very worthwhile relationships, to be honest. But if I don't like someone, I just won't interact with them, no matter who they are. But the key to having a long-term career, no matter what it is, no matter what you do, is don't be a dick. Just don't be a dick. And if you can achieve that, you can have a very, very long, fruitful career. The one bit of advice that I give to absolutely everybody, and this has happened multiple times, the same people that you see on the way up are the same people that you see on the way down. Like, and someone that you see on the way up may be above you one day and may want to give you gigs and may want to, like, I always refer to my boy Jose in Spain, like Jose Rodriguez, who's now like a DMC champion and so on and so forth. Like, he's just one of the most phenomenal scratch DJs in the entire world. I am a scratch DJ, but I've never been a DMC style scratch DJ and stuff. I'm a DJ that scratches.
But you competed in like scratch competitions?
Way back, like in the late 90s, but never the DMCs or anything like that. I never really saw the point of competition. So he used to come to all my gigs in Spain in his teens. And I don't remember this, but he came up to me quite a few times and said he was my hero and like I was his hero and stuff like that. And I was always really nice to him. Like, apparently, like, that's what he told me afterwards. And I always like kind of gave him tips and stuff like that and whatever. And now he's like the number one and he gets me on to do like kind of, he's always bigging me up. Like whenever he's like kind of interviewed or whenever he's asked for his top DJs, they're always like serious scratch DJs and me, because I was the guy that like he saw at the rage when he was like 15, 16 and stuff like that. So the same people you see on the way up are the same people that you see on the way down, 100%. And I always believe in like giving everybody the respect they deserve with your own personal boundaries in place.
Yeah. One thing I did want to ask you as well was about, I think one of the qualities that you need to have to succeed in the industry is, I think you need to be pretty resilient and you need to be able to sort of move on very quickly and things. Do you think you were naturally resilient or naturally able to... How do you get that balance right between being confident, but also being semi-responsive and also being thick-skinned and actually not being too tuned into what other people think?
privately, I'm probably none of those things. Like publicly, other people have told me I've been very adaptive over the years and like kind of found my lane all the time and jumped around and was able to. Privately, in my own head, and I think a lot of people deal with this, is like, you're a fucking loser. You're a failure. Why didn't you do better at that? Why didn't you do better at that? And I think that comes down to like maybe some like kind of latent mental health issues that probably everybody's got, that like kind of imposter syndrome and stuff like that. So you don't ignore those feelings, like kind of give all your like kind of your own personal feelings the weight and the respect that they deserve in your own head. And you can kind of sort through that for yourself. But I mean, being resilient and being thick skinned, I don't think you can be anything else. You're not going to last very long if you're not. Like, like you have to be thick skinned, because more often than not, and I know that a lot of people would disagree with me on this, but decisions that are made that are anti you, like say you're not getting booked or you're not getting whatever, they're usually not about you personally. Like they're very rarely the promoters or record labels or agents or whatever make a personal call on you as a person. So you can't take anything within the music industry like too personally. So you have to develop a somewhat of a thick skin. You have to develop a thick skin because the same people that you develop relationships with are potentially the people that are going to tell you no anyway. So you don't want to lose that relationship because they told you no. You just move on and you do something for them, like you submit yourself to them again the month after or the year after or whatever. Like, so you have to be thick skinned. You have to be, and that doesn't take away from the fact I'm a big believer in feeling how you're going to feel about situations. Because if you repress too much, that doesn't mean you can go and attack someone with a baseball bat because they didn't book you for their birthday party. That just means that you should be able to feel how you're going to feel about any situation, because it's the only way that you're actually going to heal from that situation and move on to the next thing. So don't ever repress any like kind of any feelings of like rejection or anything like that. Like feel rejected by stuff, but understand why you were rejected. It probably wasn't you as a person. It was probably just the music that you play or the your social media following or whatever it is. Like that's the reason that you were probably rejected. It's not because they thought you were a dick.
Yeah. And that point around not taking things too personally, it means you can always just, people's worlds are much more about them than they are about you. So you, I think people 100%. Think that people really have strong feelings about them, and normally they don't.
They don't, not at all. Most people don't give a shit. Like it's never like your world is never important to someone else. Your world is important to you.
Yes.
And sometimes your world that's important to you interacts with someone else's world that's important to them, because it's meant to be that way, because you can both benefit from that relationship. I mean, there always is people that are looking out for you. Like, I mean, I care about your world, Lexi. I do. I genuinely do. I care about like kind of all my students' worlds. I care about Keisha's world. I care about all my friends' worlds and stuff like that. But the reason I wouldn't choose you to go on a podcast one week is not because I hate you. It's because it's not in the slightest. Like it's because, and you've been on my webinar a couple of times, or once or a couple of times or whatever. The reason I asked you on there is because I thought your experience in your world is relevant for that. So, I mean, I'm sure there are dicks out there that don't like someone and won't work with them or won't give them the attention that they need because they think because they don't like them. I'm sure that exists. Everything exists. But on the whole, that's not how any of this kind of works. So never take anything too personally.
Yeah, you're 100% right. I've definitely seen it. I even see it in the professional world. There are some people whose ego will get in the way of them booking someone, or they might have a personal slight against a reason to not work with someone or various other things. The vast majority of people are just like, right, what am I specifically looking for in this space? Who's got that exact skill set?
Exactly.
And if someone else came on their radar, they might be like, oh yeah, sure, we'll give them a chance. Or, most people are open-minded, and most people want to put people on, want to support people, I think. I really think so.
And it goes back to my original point, right? So one of the things that I take from what I do, and one of the things that I gain massive inspiration from, is seeing other people prosper from what I help them do, right? So yes, I want to see other people prosper, but also it's that nice feeling that I get. It's the idea that I am actually serving a purpose in this bigger thing that we call a music community than just like kind of getting up there, smashing a load of vodkas, playing some tunes, and then going home with a fat wad of cash, which didn't happen that often. It happened every now and again, but like fat wad of cash bit, the drinking bit definitely did happen quite a lot. But like,
always vodka, sometimes cash.
It's always vodka though. I was a vodka fiend. It was supposed to not have, I don't believe this though, but it's supposed to not give you such a bad hangover.
Depends what you're comparing it to, I guess.
Because it's distilled, because it's super distilled. Mm. There's like not as much shit in it as there is in whiskey and beer and wine and stuff like that. But I had one night on the Beluga vodka I was in Russia somewhere. About 2 hours drive from Moscow. And they were just Beluga vodka. We got through like, about four of us got through like four bottles of it. So like a bottle each. I have never, ever suffered with a hangover quite as bad in minus 20 degrees and like a 2 hour, the most horrendous. I fell asleep at like when we got in the car, woke up for some unknown reason, the driver was out of the car taking a picture with a bear. And I was like, no, I'm going back to sleep again. And then the next thing I know, we're at Moscow airport. It was the most brutal. What was the point I was making?
Also, I was thinking about vodka questions now. I'm like, what's your mixer of choice?
But yeah, no, the reason, going back to the original point. Yeah. So yes, helping other people, but it's still something that helps me. It helps me feel good about what I do.
Coming out of the past year and a half, having worked in so many areas of the industry and turned your hand to so many things, is there one particular area or something that's pulling your, I don't know quite what the word is, but that's like really piquing your interest at the moment, or something that's that you're looking forward and you're like, that's the thing I want to put a bit more time into?
Very much so. There's a few things, to be honest. There's not to reveal all my plans, because I end up like kind of revealing all my plans and then none of them ever kind of happen. But one thing that I'm very much getting back into, and I know it goes against everything that I said earlier, but making beats again, and a completely different style to, because I'm a hip hop DJ. Everybody knows me nowadays as like a kind of, as a guy that scratches, a hip hop DJ. But I was signed to like a breaks and drum and bass label. Like I've known for playing breaks and drum and bass and jungle and stuff like that. And that's what I taught the world doing. But I absolutely love, and I've completely fallen in love again. And this is it's a very, very, very niche style of like kind of 90s New York hip hop in the DJ tools. So like Armin van Helden, Masters at Work, Funk Master Flex, DJ Riz, Crooklyn Clan. It's like hip hop instrumentals that are mashups of like kind of old funk tunes and old hip hop tunes and stuff like that, all kind of put together, and they make what's called a DJ tool. Like one of the famous ones, it's the worst example in the world, but you know that Fat Man Scoop and Faith Evans? That originally started out as on a label called AV8, which was like, it was a hip hop DJ tool label basically. And all the big producers used to go under different names and release like kind of DJ tools on there. That's not the best example, even though I do absolutely love that tune. But AV8 Records and Nervous Records used to put them out all the time, and I've just started collecting them and playing them again, like buying them on like Discogs on vinyl and like tracking down digital versions and stuff like that. And I've just started knocking my own ones up again. I used to do it's the very first thing that I did when I first got my first sampler, just because I love playing them. They go between like kind of 100 BPM and 120 BPM, and they've got like old funk samples in and stuff like that, and I just absolutely love them. So I started, that's really piqued my interest again.
Just to break it down a bit more, because when I hear the word DJ tool, I think of like, there are a lot of things that people bracket under DJ tools, or when I've seen, so there'll be an outro like various other things. So what's the distinguisher between what you're talking about in terms of DJ tools and...
So it's basically hip hop instrumentals. Stuff that there's so much in the world of DJ tools nowadays. Like you say, like could be just a scratch sound, or it could be an acapella, or it could be a 10-minute loop of a techno tune that people used to like lay underneath other stuff or whatever. These would be the kind of official other name for them would be what's called party breaks. If anybody wants to listen to them, just go and check AV8 Records. It's A, the letter, V, the letter, and then 8. The number. So AV8 Records were legendary for them, absolutely legendary. I can go in the other room now and pull out a load of AV8 Records and go, this is the ones that you want to get. But I'm not going to, because I can't be bothered to get out now. But if you check out AV8 Records, that's the kind of thing. So they're hip hop breakbeats that are meant for DJs to play at parties. That's that's exactly what they are. And they'll have like, I don't know, like a Bismarcky, RIP Bismarcky. There'll be a Bismarcky vocal on it, and then it will drop into like funky drummer, and then there'll be like a kind of a bass line from a very famous hip hop tune that kind of comes in, and with like a "Can't stop now, won't stop now," like that, and then like another bit will come in and stuff like that. Like, it's so niche, it's so such a small like kind of scene. But I've always been a DJ that loves doing what's called blends. So you get an instrumental and an a cappella, and you try and find the most creative way to like kind of cut and scratch the two together and blend them together. So I've just got obsessed with that again over lockdown for like the last 2 years, and I've created a load of blends. I was like, so what's the next step to that? And it's like, oh yeah, DJ tools, like party breaks is basically what they're categorized as, and getting back into doing that again, because it's something that I do like on decks anyway, and it's something that I used to do all the time on like my old samplers, my old Korg M1 and my old MPC and stuff like that. So old man Terry's just getting back to the 90s again.
I love it. That's cool. Like you were saying, you're not necessarily like the producer guy, but you're creative and you're that's your way of creating.
That's my wheelhouse. But that's what it is. It's like approaching it again with a DJ head. Like I approach absolutely everything that I've ever done in my life since the age of 12 as a DJ. Like, and I will only ever be a DJ for the rest of my life.
Which is probably a good way to end it.
Thank you, Terry.
Yeah, wicked. Thank you so much. Terry, if people are listening, where are your handles? Where are you at? Where can they follow, engage?
On Instagram, where I put up just loads of stupid, funny stuff and little clips of me scratching every now and again. It's at @Terry_hooligan. But my other one on Instagram is On The Rise DJ Academy, at On The Rise DJ Academy. And we've got loads of cool stuff going on over there. We've got like product announcements, number one, but we've got loads of cool blogs. Get notified about them there. We're just about to put like an inclusion rider blog up, which is really important. I think you
contributed.
Like, you contributed to that as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
But yeah, we've got loads of cool stuff going on up there. We run the line of pissing traditional DJs off by talking things like non-binary DJs and like giving spotlights to like kind of female DJs and stuff like that. Not that that should be like a controversial point whatsoever, but yeah, we do like to piss off the old school boomer DJs. not for that point, but just to the point where we like to like give a platform to non-white male middle-aged DJs, which everybody else seems to give a platform to. Like myself, that's exactly what I am. So, but I like to give a platform to the non-traditional. You can go and check out mydjhub.com, which is a completely free DJ mentorship and DJ resource. You can sign up for free, come to our webinars, listen to our podcasts and stuff like that. And we just focus on a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about today, to be honest, like the stuff that you might not necessarily get from other places. We try to bring on experts, again, like you, Lexi. We talk about everything that you need to know, like live streaming, recording mixes. We talk about mental health within the music industry. We talk about like kind of record label stuff. And yeah, so go on there, check out all like the different webinars that we've got on there. That's kind of cool. Yeah, I think that's about all. Oh, you can check me out as a DJ as well, Atomic Hooligan on Facebook. You can check me out as Terry Hooligan on Mixcloud, on SoundCloud, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I'm all over the shop. Terry Hooligan, Atomic Hooligan, On The Rise DJ Academy, or My DJ Hub. And you'll be able to find me.
You go by Terry Hooligan now, don't you, rather than Atomic Hooligan?
Both, really. Both. Whatever the promoter wants to do. Me personally, if anybody asks, I'm Terry Hooligan. Mm. Atomic Hooligan was me and another gentleman called Matt, who, again, I'm still really good friends with now. But people associate Atomic Hooligan quite a lot with like a, we had like a 10-piece live band as well. We used to tour the world with a big band. And they kind of associate that with both me and Matt. But I'm really the only Atomic Hooligan now. It's both. Yeah.
The final thing I would just say, and just in terms of everything you do with My DJ Hub and On The Rise, just for people listening, is there's always a complete transparency with everything that you're working on in terms of sharing of information. And I know I've profited and benefited from that so much. And that's so much of what we try and do with Hot Girls, is just make sure that just everyone's being honest, because then we can all help each other grow and help each other develop. So yeah, so you know, if you're checking out that stuff, that you're going to get truth.
Please, you brought that up, because... But the only thing that I've wanted to do for the last 10 years is blow the mystery away from everything. Like, just go like that and go, this is what it is. What up, Lex?
We keep our eyes on the prize. It's no surprise. Good women, we're destined to rise. Yeah. Inspiring.